Previously on Gresh and Keith.
37 yard or two to win it, and John Sterling on the call.
It is gone! No, he missed it.
Good.
Are you kidding me? He missed it right.
He missed it right.
You think he started smacking himself in the face?
Oh, yeah. I love the detail of, oh, he missed it right.
This is Gresh and Keith.
People are going to be hard on Mac Jones because he's not doing the wow stuff.
Chucky in the equipment room?
Yeah.
We're going to suit him up, put him in the slot, run a go route?
You are not going to beat New England because they give you a game.
But according to some fans out there, he's not supposed to do that. He's supposed to throw a go route to make him feel good.
Andy Gresh.
Are you passing up opportunities to take shots down the field?
I wouldn't say that. I just think it goes back to just me sticking to my rules. At the end of the day, it's about moving the ball and taking what the defense gives you. And
Rich Keith.
Do you ever watch film? And I said, no, I don't. I just run by guys. If I'm feeling good, I'm feeling good.
We're f***ing good.
Gresh and Keith starts right now.
Well, are the Mac Jones touchdowns like sex?
1, 2, 3, 4, fifth!
On WEEI.
Oh, boy. We're going to get into what you think you know about the New England Patriots here. We have a lot to get to today. We haven't talked hardly any defense on the New England Patriots. We will get to that. Peter King will join us at 12:45, but a little differently than you're used to, because Keith and I just recorded our first podcast with Peter King that will be up at some point later today on WEEI.com and the Odyssey app. So today is one of those stop down days, Keith, I think, for a lot of NFL fans.
That's right.
Especially for us in evaluating the New England Patriots. And it's so weird because you're so used to 16 games that you can go in 2 and 4 game chunks. And now we got 17. All the numbers are thrown off. But regardless, what do we think we know about the New England Patriots after week two?
I think we know that they have a competent quarterback. We don't know if he's all pro, but we know he doesn't suck. And I felt that way even during the preseason, but I had to stop myself and say, it's preseason. Like, okay, other guys, like I think Ryan Mallett had a good preseason game. Jarrett Stidham had some good preseason games. So you didn't want to put all your stock into that. But some of the other moves that they made, clearly cutting Cam Newton, having him start week one, you're like, all right, they're confident in him. But then watching Mac Jones play the first 2 weeks, and I know people are like, I only has one touchdown pass, and they settled for a lot of field goals. Yeah, but he seems like he gets it. And that might be oversimplistic, but nothing's too big for him. He's not freaking out the line of scrimmage. Have we seen him once call timeout because the play clock was going to stop?
No.
We haven't seen that,
so
right?
So from an operation standpoint, yeah, he's
a rookie.
Light years ahead.
He's a rookie who's not throwing interceptions, and he's a rookie who is not either having to call timeout or committing dumb penalties or anything like that. He at least gets it. Now, there's always room for improvement, but guess what? He's played two games.
And that's the thing, is that if you look at Mac Jones and that these 2 weeks are a baseline or even just a foundation, if you're thinking of it in terms of building a house, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's laid
a strong foundation.
That's right. He has laid a very good foundation. And I can hear the, you know, camo maniacs out there right now
getting ready to
text at 37937 or yell at us at Gresh
Keith
on Twitter.
You think there's camo maniacs? Oh, that he was good through 2 weeks last year?
Well, there you go. That's the thing, that's the point. Two weeks.
He's a hero.
Look at what happened last year in Seattle, 397 yards. Yeah, and then, you know, struck midnight on Cinderella.
Yeah, last year was the extremes, though, where week one, Cam and the Patriots ran all over the place, and then week two, they threw all over the place. And we found out by week four that Seahawks secondary was one of the historically worst in NFL history. Didn't Dak throw for like 600 against them? Matt Ryan threw for like 500. Like, they gave up so many yards earlier. You're like, oh, that's what that was. That wasn't Cam. What Cam was doing clearly wasn't sustainable. Whereas Mac Jones, it's not like he is lighting the world on fire, but they beat the Jets pretty soundly, and he at least put him in a position to beat the Dolphins. They didn't, obviously,
right.
But it wasn't a Mac Jones problem. So my biggest takeaway was just that, like, all right, you're turning it over to the rookie. Whereas if you're in New York or you're in Jacksonville, you're like, what the hell? Like, does Zach Wilson suck, or is he just young, or does the team suck? Like, you're freaking, like, he hasn't looked very good. Trevor Lawrence has been probably more bad than good. The other two guys are barely playing. Trey Lance didn't even play week two. Justin Fields, they're like, hey, why don't you play? And Matt Nagy's like, I'm going with Andy Dalton. They're like, why? Why the hell are you going with Andy Dalton? And they're like, we don't know. Whereas Mac Jones has been steady, and again, plenty of room for improvement, but at least he sort of passed that first test.
One of the great strengths of the New England Patriots is their coaching staff. I don't think there's anybody who can deny that. Whether you love Bill Belichick or you don't like Bill Belichick, you can't deny the man is maybe the best ever. And the continuity of the coaching staff, it hasn't been disrupted. But when you look at what happened last year, they couldn't coach the way they wanted to. Even more than just the pandemic, it was trying to figure it out on offense every week.
Right.
Last year, there weren't the defensive horses. And the thing that I think I know about this Patriots group is that those coaches can now coach the way we are used to seeing them coach once again. There's plenty of weaponry on defense. I know there's no Stephon Gilmore. And the defensive line, right, yet.
Yeah.
And we'll get to some of that because we are going to actually talk about the defense a little bit today here on Gresham Keefe. But now we've got coaches that are back into their comfort zone, mm-hmm. whereas the offense, they're running what they want to run on the whole. Or at least it's not like last year with Cam where you were trying to figure out, okay, well, I can pull this from the playbook, this from the playbook. We make it work for Cam, and we find a way to run our offense. They're back to Josh McDaniels is back, even if he is scaling it back a little bit. Josh McDaniels is back to calling the Patriots offense. Bill Belichick is back to coaching the New England Patriots, I think, the way he wants to. Mm-hmm. And I know it's kind of flying under the radar because they're 1-1 and it hasn't been flashy and all of that. But last year, at some point, they had to be pulling their hair out. In fact, probably by week 10, they were pulling their hair out because how in the world do we fix these issues? You really couldn't.
Yeah.
Now they're fixed and they can get back to being themselves. And that's massive, I think, for this team.
Yeah, I mean, the talent on the team is so much better than it was a year ago. And it's not just the quarterback. We're so focused on the quarterback, and we should be. I mean, it's the most important position. But look at defensively. Like, look who started, who got most of the snaps a year ago, and then jump forward to this year. And look at the guys they have. The guys lining up next to Lawrence Guy. So Lawrence Guy is sort of the one holdover from that defensive front. And everybody around him is better than everybody from a year ago. Dont'a Hightower is back, better than what you had a year ago.
Hasn't missed a step, it doesn't look like, by the way.
No, I know, because we didn't really take a lot of time to consider. This guy took a whole year off of football.
At like 30 years old,
right.
Which is the danger zone for most uh-huh. NFL players anyway.
And he's come back and he's looked really good. And unfortunately, Van Noy's been hurt, so one of your other key additions hasn't really been able to have as much of an impact. But no, I think defensively, they're still going to be pretty good. I definitely want Gilmore back. Like I'm going to keep hammering that drum until a decision is made on that. I think they could absolutely use him, but no, they're still in a pretty good place. And you know, again, you look around the league, a lot of AFC teams are 1-1. A lot of teams that you thought were going to be, you know, flying out to these hot starts, and a lot of them are 1-1. So the Patriots are in a decent spot.
So. All right, so we got some time for you early this morning at 617-779-7937. Through 2 weeks, what do we think we know about these New England Patriots? What do you think you know about the Patriots? You can get in a bunch of different ways via Twitter at Gresh Keefe, text 37937, of course, on the phones, and you can watch us do this show on Twitch, weei.com/watch. Of course, that's our 3T, Twitch, Twitter, and text. All the ways you can contribute to this show outside of being able to call 617-779-7937. The whole what do we think we know about the Patriots? After Mac Jones, do you feel secure in a number two definitive that yes, this is what I think I know about this group?
I think I know that the offensive line is a lot thinner than I thought. I thought the offensive line had a great starting group, and I thought more than serviceable backups.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when you looked at it, of course, you don't want to lose any of the guys, but if you did, you had Ted Karras for the interior, and I thought Heron was better than he was. They also acquired Durant, so I was like, all right, they obviously liked him. They saw something in him, so you have him. And Kujust, who's been hurt, played pretty well in the preseason. So I'm like, this team could withstand the offensive line injury. That always happens. Every single year, somebody, at least one guy gets hurt on the offensive line. I appear to be wrong about that. They are pretty thin. They need their five guys to be out there, because if not, it can be a bit of a mess, as evidenced by really as soon as Brown went down week one, and then a whole bunch of times in the first half in week two.
So I think there was a little bit of fool's gold for all of us, right? So we saw what we saw in the preseason, recognizing that guys like Heron and Kujust and people like that we're going up against other teams' number twos.
Right.
However, a lot of our feeling, and I don't want to speak for you, but I think for a lot of Patriot Nation out there all across New England listening to us on the WEEI Sports Radio Network, I think there was the, oh, well, they played well last year, right? Justin Herron stepped in. He played well last year. Mike Onwenu was a standout, he's transferred over into this offense. But I think maybe something that, and I'm in this group as well, that we all failed to consider was what happened last year is not what is going on this year. So we look at guys
better
like,
or worse.
Well, yeah, and when you think of guys like Onwenu, he's been able to translate to this offense seamlessly and prove that we didn't see, in the words of the great Bugs Bunny, a mirage.
There you go.
I mean, it was not a mirage.
No.
However, maybe with some of those backups, like Justin Herron, last year was a byproduct of what they were doing, and it tailored to his skill set. But now that you're running the quote-unquote real Patriots offense, maybe some of these guys either, A, aren't as good to run it, or B, need to take their lumps in it to then get better and prove they can run it. So maybe some of that is on us as well. And since we are a part of the discussion leaders for sports here in the city of Boston, I think there's a little, even I am like, okay, maybe we conflated too much in our own mind into thinking that some of these backups might be better than they are.
Yeah, and it might also be, the old Dante Scarnecchia.
There's that too.
Fallback, right? Where they're like, oh, he'll fix it.
Doesn't Bill have another million to dangle in front of Scar to be able to lure him back?
What else are you doing?
And what is Scar? You know what he did?
Apple picking? Come on.
So when I was working down at my other place in Rhode Island, I know that when Dante retired, he's got a place apparently in Narragansett, Rhode Island, which is where it's a beach area, and a lot of the kids go to URI, we'll rent houses there and stuff like that. And the word on the street was that, like, for some of those, not like town council meetings, but like a condo association or something. That he was going there and like punking people out. He's like the smartest guy in the room, sitting there listening to a bunch of idiots and then being like,
he's running that place.
Exactly.
The mayor of Narragansett.
No, that's the brilliance of Dante Scarnecchia. He could run the place, but he's smart enough to not put himself in position to run the place.
But a couple more bad weeks, they may give him a call.
I mean, you might have to, just to shore some things up, because I don't think they don't have players. Like, when we look at it, you can see that Justin Herron has talent. There's still something there with Yadni Kajust.
Yeah.
We know how good Onwenu is. That's why the guy's in the starting lineup. So I don't think it's the,
and
you know, you're trying to convert Tom Ashworth into something.
And
you know?
One bad offensive lineman shouldn't completely sink your offense.
It shouldn't.
There's got to be ways to say, all right, hey, you know, right guard, you have to help him out more. Tight end, you have to help him out more. Running back, you have to help him out more. Whatever. Like, you have to figure out ways, because what team in the NFL loves all five of their linemen? Like the Browns, the Colts, the Cowboys?
Maybe.
Like, not many.
Maybe.
Not many teams love all five, and yet they're still able to produce offensively. Because one thing that I'm not really sure I know about is the improvement of the skill position guys. On paper, significantly better than last year. But don't you still kind of want to see it? Like, Jonnu Smith, I was so excited about Jonnu Smith.
You're not souring, are you?
No, because he's hurt, but it's also like, he's hurt.
Right.
So I look at it kind of two ways. You're like, is it an excuse, or is it just what he's going to be dealing with all year? So I'm not sour. I still really like Jonnu Smith, but Smith, Henry, Aguilar, Bourne, big free agency splashes, and what have we really seen? It's 2 weeks. But I would like to see more from those guys.
And that's a chicken versus the egg theory, right?
Yeah.
How much of it is the play calling being tailored to be conservative? Is Mac not seeing them? And again, you look at those wide receivers. There has not been a moment in two games where we were all screaming, yay, he's open up the sideline. Like, there's been none of that going on to where you see these wide receivers separating. And you know what, Keith? It does make me wonder, how are they going to address that with those wide receivers? Now, I know a guy who is a frequent guest on the Greg Hill Show, Charlie Weiss.
Yes.
When Charlie Weiss needed to doctor up this offense, it was two things: shifts and motion. And I'm trying to go back and think about how much of that and screens, But the shifts and the motions to me led to the screens. And I wonder if, as Mac Jones gets more comfortable reading defenses and doing what the coaching staff wants him to do, when do we start to get the window dressing? Because it seemed pretty plain on the whole when it comes to formations and moving, like, yes, a lot of it was Mac, you know, the week one against Miami where he has Hunter Henry, you know, move down because changed the protection.
Right.
That kind of stuff gains you the confidence of the coaching staff. But when do they really start to kick in the, okay, for 30 years in the NFL, we've known that if we put the slot guy in motion, that's going to be a coverage indicator, make it easier for the kid, and you can dress it up in all these different ways.
They currently have five guys averaging between 35 and 47 yards receiving per game.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you're not having the one superstar or the two guys that are sort of breaking out. You have five guys.
There's five guys.
There's the two tight ends. I get mine with ketchup and jalapenos.
Oh.
You have the two tight ends. You have Nelson Agholor, Jacoby Myers, James White. All those guys are kind of right there. And that's why, you mentioned Charlie Weiss, the comparisons to that 01, 02, 03, 04 offense where a lot of running game, right? A lot of Antoine Smith and a lot of Corey Dillon. But if you go back and look at some of those numbers, too, whether it was Givens, Patton, Brown, nobody's lighting the world on fire. Nobody's going for 1,500 yards receiving. Nobody's going for, you know, 10 touchdowns or anything like that. So I wonder, is that just early going, or is that going to continue all season long where all five of these guys, like, any day – the guy, one of those five guys could be your leading receiver. Or eventually is Mac Jones going to have sort of his guy? Like, is he going to get his Edelman Gronk?
Well, and that's interesting because I think we talked after week one that with Brady, it turned into, well, Edelman Gronk are the only guys that I can count on. And they were still good enough, by the way, to draw up offense to win sometimes just throwing to those two guys.
But for 5 years, it was more like what we're seeing right now.
That's exactly right. And I think that the quarterback – you know, we're going to get to something that Mac Jones said coming up in the 11 o'clock hour with Maloney and Fourier yesterday that I think has become a tell as to how maniacal he is, but also why he's the perfect quarterback for this offense. Mm. And we go back to the Brady throws to the open guy, right? Because the narrative coming out of Bledsoe was he only throws to Ben Coates or only throw to his guys. And that's what it turned into in the end for Brady. But it wasn't the I have no one else. It's the these are the dudes that I trust. And as long as I can trust them, I know I can win with these cats. To me, it was an issue of competitiveness with Brady. With Mac, I still think it's going to be, well, we're going to throw it to the open guy. James White can end up with 80 catches this year.
Yeah, he definitely could. I mean, go back to, I think it was 2018, James White led the team in receptions, and it could be one of those type of seasons.
Here's one thing I know about the Patriots.
All right.
They have a kicker. They don't have to mess around with a kicker anymore.
Yeah, he's on my list,
too. And I know that, again, I think the kicking spot has also turned into the way quarterbacks are evaluated. And I know I was all hot and bothered yesterday with, like, you know, getting on people. It's like, oh, Zach Wilson can do all this.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You're upset.
However, it's kind of the same thing with kickers. Oh, he can't consistently hit 55 yarders.
Don't need it.
That's exactly right.
Don't need it. There's not a lot of Justin Tuckers.
Exactly. And the guy from Dallas who boomed the 56-yarder for a game winner, right?
Legatron.
If you're trying those consistently, like if your kicker has to be good from 50-plus for you to say he's worth being on the roster, then you have other issues on your football team.
Well, Nick Folk set the record, franchise record, most consecutive field goals made, and I feel like he should share the award or the honor with Belichick, because Belichick wasn't lining him up for 55, 60 yards. I think he knows his limitations, and that's why some of these other kickers who might be better, their streaks don't go as long, because they're put in situations where you're like, the chance of you making this isn't great, but this is what we're going to do. Right? Like, how many times did Bill say, all right, we're not going for this super long field goal? And he could have ended his streak probably 10 in.
Punt and play field position.
Punt and play field position, but also what you do on third down is going to affect what, like, in the back of your mind, like, we're not kicking a field goal here, so this is what we're going to do. Or there are times where we are going to kick a field goal, and you just set them up for the best spot possible. But, yeah, because that can be a real pain. If you're a good team and your kicker sucks, like the Vikings seem to deal with it every year. I think the Bears have dealt with it a bunch of times. There's been so many teams that you get down there, and then you're losing all these games by 1, 2, 3 points because your kicker missed twice during the game and then misses the game winner. So
I'd rather have a guy who's rock solid 40 and in
100%.
Than the guy who can occasionally hit a 62-yarder, which how many times are you going to kick those over the course of a season?
In a bizarre twist, the guy missed an extra point during the game in which he set the record for field goals, consecutive field goals. But But Belichick was also talking yesterday about how windy it was there. He said, like, the wind was crazy. He said it was not a good kicking game.
And if anybody knows about the wind in Giants Stadium or down there, it was him because, back in the day in the 80s, the urban legend, the rumor and innuendo was whenever teams would be lining up to kick, they would open those big, like, I know in the stadium business, they call it elephant doors, you know, where, like, all the animals used to come in for the circus before that got canceled.
The old elephant doors.
Then you would open those doors up underneath, and it would change the airflow in the stadium. And it was one of those deals that like, I think is now kind of an open secret.
Yeah, Bill gave Greg Hill, like, a five-minute answer on the wind, what it was like at the old Giant Stadium, what it's like now, and how it went this way. And he's sitting there during the anthem, and it was blowing one way, then it stopped, then it started blowing the other way, and he's talking to the special teams coach. It's like, the guy loves his wind. He is a wind expert when it comes to the football
game. He loves his wind.
He loves wind. It's all about it.
Well, wasn't he in a dome wondering if it was going to, dome was going to, for one of the Super Bowls, right?
That was the Rams Super Bowl in Atlanta.
Yes.
Where he had like this whole conversation and got picked up on one of the shows where he's like, so they're doing a flyover. He's like, so is it going to be open or closed for kickoff? And the ref's like, what? But again, it was going to determine whether Bill was going to kick that way or this
way.
He's
a maniac. It really is.
Detail.
It just goes to show the what goes on inside that beautiful football mind of Bill Belichick. We see you, Ray and Revere, and you at 617-779-7937. So we ask you the question, what do you think you know about these New England Patriots through 2 weeks? We will talk with Peter King. You'll hear Peter King talking about Mac Jones coming up at 12:45. Kiefer Madness, oh, baby.
Yeah, this is a doozy.
We got another doozy for Kiefer Madness. We will turn the page in the 1 o'clock hour. We will be on to New Orleans, but we want to talk some Patriots with you. Don't forget, you can hit us on text 37937. Here's Shime. He's ready to trend.
Gresh and Keefe.
The more layers you peel, the more I don't stink.
Tell a friend about Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
Chased down the play by Baker, and he got the ball off to Kendrick Bourne. Oh, and he got it inside the 35, and a flag has been thrown.
Yeah.
Back at the 25, could wipe out a gain of 32.
Holy. Yeah, it's coming back.
Offense,
Perron.
Number 75, 10-yard penalty, replay first down.
He's the one taking the plays of the injured Trent Brown at the right tackle.
Oh, the offensive line. Keith and I have talked about that a lot. We've been very heavy on the offense, in part because of Mac Jones. We will get to the Patriots defense coming up. It is 10:31. Gresh and Keefe, WEEI Sports Radio Network, WEEI.com. By the way, if you're listening to us on the Odyssey app and you're leaving to go to work, make sure you're on 93.7 FM here in the Boston area, 103.7 FM down in Providence as well. And when you get back to work, you can always listen again on the Odyssey app. All right, let's get to some phones here. Ray and Revere kicks it off with Gresh and Keefe. Hello, Ray.
Hey, good morning, guys. Listen, I think this is a transition season. I know we're optimistic because I think we found a real quarterback. But, you know, we had the JV and the varsity on last week back-to-back. And, you know, watching Tampa Bay, I can't think of a single unit on their team that you wouldn't take over the Patriots. You take their front seven, you take their receivers, you take their offensive line. You know, so I think we need to temper expectations. We could very well be 1-3 in 2 weeks, guys, and we'll be begging for 9 wins after that.
Yeah.
So let me just leave you with this.
Go ahead.
Let me just leave you with this. Brady's thrown to 3 Hall of Fame receivers right now. Okay, Evans, Brown, and Gronk. And Godwin's better than anybody else we got. I think he throws 60 this year, guys, 60 TDs. He threw 40 last year. It took him 2 months to find the bathroom. That's the team, guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah,
all right,
Ray.
Thanks for the call.
I mean, I think to say that it's a transition season, it makes Ray sound like that he thinks that this group is going to have a losing record, which to me is completely ridiculous. Unless something catastrophic happens. And, you know, the Tampa offensive line is good. I still like the Patriots offensive line 1-5 better. I think what we've learned is 1-5 is good. 6, 7, and 8 may not be as good as we thought. But then again, the next best guy might be Ted Karras. And they're not playing him for some reason.
How's this for a caveat? With Gilmore, the Patriots' secondary is better than the Bucs' secondary.
I think right now, given the way that the Patriots have gotten off to a good start and what we've seen on the back end, Kevin only gets crazy. And that gets us into talking about the defense. And I know it's the Jets, right? So, again, we always have to put the caveat in there that, okay, they went against the Jets.
Yeah,
and the
right.
Jets suck on an epic level. But Jalen Mills, to me, has not stood out in a very bad way. He hasn't played perfect football, don't get me wrong.
No.
But we haven't seen the... Odd Gilmore would have covered that play.
Well, to me, there was one of those, and that's why, just like with Mac Jones, like there's one bad throw that he had against Miami. Just like Jalen Mills, it was one bad coverage. And I don't know if this is what they asked him to do. Maybe it is, but it was first and 14, and he's on the side. This is back to the Dolphin game. Really nothing bad you can say about the Jets game. They had four interceptions, and they really dominated.
Right.
But against Miami, he has this huge cushion on Devontae Parker, who picks up 13 yards. You're like, all right, well, now like the game's over. Now they just ran it, and the game was over. Like, so that was sort of an odd spot. He had that great play in the end zone where he saved a touchdown. Now, he's been solid, but like you just know Gilmore's better, and then you can put him in a different role where he's covering, you know, number three and number four receivers, which would be really ideal, I think, for him.
And I wonder how much of what they're doing with Jalen Mills right now is going to translate into what we think might happen if Stephon Gilmore comes back and is inserted in this defense. We have always been trained around here for years that the first 4 weeks of the regular season are when Bill Belichick is standing there with that pencil and writing down a bunch of notes, and you're like, oh boy, I'd love to see what that note card looks like, because he's got to be thinking about his personnel
right
as he's writing those notes down and evaluating all those guys at the same time. And I know there was a big deal made that when you looked at like the play sheet, like Jalen Mills is playing a bunch of corner, but he's still listed as a safety.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so it was, oh, three safety look. Nah, Mills was playing a lot of corner in there.
Yes, for sure.
But it makes me wonder, okay, if Bill knows that they identify him as a corner and a safety and all the hocus pocus with the numbers and things like that, it makes me wonder if in the back of Belichick's mind, it's, well, I know when we get Gilmore back, here's what I can do. How can I deploy the rest of these guys?
How much of the Bill Belichick takes the first month and uses that as extra preseason still applies when you don't have Tom Brady and you are not head and shoulders above everybody else in the division?
I think it applies even more.
Really?
Yeah, because you're trying to either plug the holes or figure out what you do or don't have. Like,
but you can't get away with it like you could before. Before, well, you could be 2-2 or 1-3, and you would still win the division by three games. Now, if the caller's right, the very pessimistic caller's right, and they're 1-3, like, you better hope that the Bills trip up, or you're certainly not going to catch them.
But again, if it's based on our expectations, and you and I were very much the same, 10-7 making the playoffs, right?
Wild card.
So even if you're 2-2 at that point, and even 1-3 isn't cataclysmic, but it doesn't make you feel good. Like, a win against New Orleans would really sort of boost the spirits, I would say, going into the Tampa game.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, they had Tom Brady, but defensively 1 year, Bill Belichick was like, we don't have a good enough corner, and he went and got Aqib Talib, and it changed that football team. So I don't necessarily know if it was Brady gave them the cushion to do that, or if it is just Bill looking at the Jimmys and the Joes and saying, well, Godshall isn't as good as I thought. I got to go get me another, you know, fat body to put in the middle, right, or something like that.
Well, defensively, no. I mean, I think that was sort of a Bill thing. Like, he had to make those adjustments. Remember Stephon Gilmore's first year? He looked like a terrible signing because they were playing so much zone and they were getting torched. And then was it week five or whatever? They're like, all right, we'll play more man. And you're like, oh, there you go. You have a number one corner. Like, now the defense looks good. Whereas with Brady, you kind of figured they would get things sorted out.
And that's the thing. The defense has looked good overall through two games.
Yeah, I got no problem with the defense. I think they got to tighten up the run defense. I think they got bailed out by the Jets kind of going away from the run. Because when they were running with whatever guy they wanted to, whether it was Coleman or Carter, didn't matter. They were moving the ball there, but then they kept taking chances downfield. And then that's where they were taking advantage of Zach Wilson. So regardless of what you think about Jameis Winston, you're going to get a better matchup. Like, if you're going to learn a little bit more about the defense this week than you did on Sunday.
You can go to WEEI.com right now. Ryan Hannibal's got a piece up on some Patriot nitpicks. And even though you and I both like the Patriots defense and what we've seen so far, it isn't perfect, but I mean, nothing ever is. I do think there's one spot. It's that defensive line holding up against the run. And I admit, I don't know how much of that is that experimentation that we've talked about with different lineups. You know, is Josh Uche going to be a guy that you can count on to be better at setting the edge and be a good pass rusher at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, and those defensive tackles, like, we know they could put four real defensive tackles on the field if they want to. The problem is most teams are like, okay, we're going to check out of it. And that's, see, when you mention Gilmore, and I admit I'm still a little iffy as to that this thing is going to work out the way Patriot fans want to with Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah.
But when he comes back, the big effect of him might be you can take one of those other guys out of the secondary and insert another big body up front when you play those run teams, because you can say to Gilmore, just go shadow that guy.
Yeah,
or just line up, and whoever's over here, we're going to play the rest of the defense for the rest of the offense. You just go take that guy out.
That's a good
point. Now they don't have that guy. And I wonder if the extra defensive back is in right now because Bills, again, it's the whole beautiful mind. Mm-hmm. Here's what I know Jawan Williams can do. Here's what I know Mills can do. Because Jonathan Jones ain't changing. He's going to be the slot corner.
Right.
It's going to be how you're going to use the rest of those cats.
Yeah, because without him, and you have at least four more games without Gilmore, so you have to wonder, all right, the opposing offensive coordinator has to be smarter than LaFleur from the Jets.
Well,
just
you
has
hope
to be.
So, right.
So if you're playing nickel the whole time or you're playing all these guys and you actually are running the ball pretty effectively, I don't know, keep doing it.
Right.
Keep doing it. And I feel like with whether it's Kamara on the Saints, even the Bucks, like even the Bucks, although they could still throw against anybody with what they have, but I feel like those teams are going to just run it a little bit more, make the Patriots make that adjustment, and then now maybe you take safety off the field or whatever else.
On the text via the 413, mm-hmm. This is great. Not following along, and it's okay.
All good.
Patriots bring back Gilmore before the Bucs game. Thoughts? If you could, you'd do it.
I would love it.
But he's on PUP and is out till at least week six. So, no, that isn't even an option.
His first game possible is the Jets game. Actually, they play the Jets week seven.
He's not coming back against the
Jets.
I
don't think you really need him there.
Don't you think that with Gilmore, if he is on this roster and if he does play here this year,
yeah,
that to your point, like that's a game where you could be like, or you play him 20 snaps. Hey, go out, stretch it out, kid. Feel good. All right, there you go. Go get a little fall on the turf, make a tackle, get into live play, and then we can really take off.
Week eight, meanwhile, is Halloween at the Chargers. You're gonna need him there.
Halloween in L.A. What is that like?
Probably the same as any day.
Really?
Probably,
you think the weirdos? You think the weirdos in Hollywood are?
Those guys look. They look like they. Every day is Halloween.
Look, God forbid they eat chocolate for God's sakes. Yeah, there was some awards show over the weekend.
Emmys.
One of the Emmys. Yeah. I think Ted Lasso did well. He shaved his mustache.
They cleaned up.
He did.
Won a lot. Mayor of Easttown.
Mayor of Easttown did well.
Him into.
That's right. By the way, Dork Podcast, up right now, weei.com. What did you and Davey hit?
It was a grab bag last night, so it was just all kinds of different stuff. We answered some listener questions. We hit on the Emmys briefly. We talked about Norm MacDonald's because we hadn't been on since Norm MacDonald's passing.
Oh, that's right, on Dork.
So we talked about that as well. So,
when's the AEW episode?
We actually mentioned Rosario Dawson.
When are we going to chop up some AEW what's going on?
Yeah.
Because the other wrestling league, for those of you who are wrestling fans, you know, they're getting like 1.5 million younger viewers to watch because CM Punk showed up.
Right.
They're in Arthur Ashe Stadium on Wednesday night.
Oh, that's
pretty
cool.
That's going to be their big Grand Slam event where they're going to put 20,000 people in a tennis stadium to watch wrestling.
Are they going to shush everybody like they do at tennis?
Nah, I don't think so. That actually would be kind of funny. Is if it was that's an MJF move right there.
Oh, for sure.
All right, we're going to get to the Mannings and Monday Night Football. I got to say, I am digging this Manning cast.
Stinks.
And Peyton,
I can't stand the Mannings.
What?
I can't stand them.
Come on.
They don't need a microphone.
Well, Eli does. Peyton doesn't. Peyton's a boomer, and he knows what he's doing. But I think Green Bay answered some questions, and Peyton Manning digging at the Patriots on the Manning cast. That's next.
Gresh and Keefe.
My ass is sublime.
That's not fair.
Tell a friend about Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
He goes, do you ever watch film? And I said, no, I don't. I just run by guys. If I'm feeling good, I'm feeling good. So I don't know how to answer that. I don't watch film, but I do watch
keep
film
it simple.
When the team is showing it. And I actually do go up to Tom because I know Tom watches like, I don't know, 40 hours of film a week. I go, Tom, who's covering me this week? What type of coverages are they doing? I go, that's why I love playing with you guys. I just know everything.
Yes, that was a dog barking in the background of Rob Gronkowski joining the Manning cast. So that was from last night. And the one thing I will give the Manning cast credit for on their little alternate Monday Night Football feed that's on ESPN2, I don't know if they're paying people. I don't know if they're like, you know, podcasters who have to like pay to get people on or something like that. But the guest list for this has been pretty big.
Yeah, that's more impressive than the two brothers just aw shucking each other. I didn't watch it because I can't stand either one of the guys, but I saw the guest list and saw Pat McAfee was going to make an appearance. So I was like, oh, that could be pretty good. I don't know. It's just those two guys I couldn't stand during their playing career, and I don't want to hear from them. Now, with that said,
but you will learn a lot by watching, though.
Learn what?
Oh, no.
How lame they are?
No. Basically, every quarterback mistake that is made, Peyton Manning is automatically on top of it, so that when you see it and it's like, oh, what happened there? Hey! And he has got it. Like, that's the one thing I give that broadcast credit for, is that, yeah, there's some grab ass with Gronk and stuff like that.
Right.
But they actually, like tell you the, here's where this guy went way wrong. And it honestly takes you into the mind of much more of Peyton than Eli.
Yeah.
And I always equate Peyton close to Brady and the way they think.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's just me being a football hardo that you do learn something by listening to Peyton during these games.
Yeah, I don't know.
You can't bring yourself to do it.
No, like, I just can't stand it. Like, it's like if Roethlisberger or like LeBron did a game, I'd be like, no, I can't. Like, that's my list. Those are the guys I cannot stand.
Watch that
on
broadcast.
The field, off the field.
Watch that broadcast with the Mannings, or pick up a garden snake out of your yard.
Oh, I mean, it's probably the Mannings.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
I don't have a fear of the Mannings.
I didn't know if it
like
was
this.
That bad.
No, there's an actual real fear in there, whereas the Mannings, I don't like. But also, the Lewis Riddick, Brian Greasy broadcast is not exactly... Like, at what point does Peyton Manning just take their job?
Well, I think ESPN would love to have him do that. Nah, Peyton built his own... They built Omaha Productions to where he, like, goes to his garage and
he's not doing every game, right?
I think they're doing every game. I think the brothers are doing every game. And I don't know... I will say this, the amount of infrastructure that goes into that broadcast, like when they, now Gronk had a wonky internet connection.
Yeah, that's tough.
But
I'll let you down.
But when you had Charles Barkley and Travis Kelce and all these other guys, it looked like they were in a room where there was what we would say in the business is the fiber optics, where they had unbelievable lines to where they came across so clear. And by the way, they did have a lot to talk about last night because Aaron Rodgers put on a show.
And
I guess the demise of the Green Bay Packers was overstated because they rolled Detroit last night 35-17. It was cute early. And then in the second half, it was like, okay.
Lions were up at the half.
We know what we're doing here,
Then it became all Green Bay. Did you see that Aaron Jones, who had a monster game, by the way?
I did. He's on my fantasy team. So Rodgers and Jones helped me beat John this week.
His father died from COVID, and he had a chain around his neck with a little football, and inside the football were some ashes from his father.
Mm-hmm.
After he scored one of his touchdowns, the necklace got, I guess, like, ripped off.
Keep Tlaib snatched it?
He lost it.
Well, they found it today.
Did they?
Yes, they did.
Because all last night, and they kept, like, because I was, like, I had it on as I was, like, editing my podcast, and I'm listening to, like, the post-game show, and they're, like, Lisa Salters or whatever, like, yeah, they still don't know where it is. Like, they're still, so that's good. I'm all right, John, I feel better about that. They found it. But, like, they're like, I don't know where it is. We're going to have people look for it. Like,
I guess initially Jones said he thought he lost it in the end zone somewhere.
So
they found it. And I guess the ashes were to be spread across Lambeau Field. But, the way Aaron Jones was explaining it was, well, if it's in the end zone, my dad always wanted to score anyway. Something like that. But that's.
But she, like, asked him, because like, she did the post-game interview with Aaron Rodgers and Jones. And Rodgers was like, all right, yeah, thanks. And then she's talking to Jones, and she's like, you know, because his dad was at all the games, and he'd always talk to his dad before the games and everything else. And she was just like, asking him about, like, you know, his thought process in Lambeau, you know, after losing his dad. And he's like, actually, he's like, I was wearing a chain with him on it. I was like, oh my God.
What about how in the world do you get away wearing a chain while you're out there as a running back and all that contact?
A
not that you're shirtless
do.
Underneath.
It's crazy. Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get the whole, like, oh, I'm an NFL rookie. Let me go buy a $250,000 medallion.
It's a good investment.
Oh, yeah, it's a great investment.
You got to look good to play good.
Yeah, yeah, it's an easy way to get your house robbed. If people stick you up and be like, oh, you don't put that in the safe.
That's true.
And the next thing you know, you have an issue. Hey, I want to get back to the Manning part of the Monday Night Football broadcast.
And another example why he's obnoxious.
Well, he...
Yeah, all right. I think there's going to be a lot of people on my side after they hear this.
I don't know. You tell me. Is Peyton obnoxious, or is he being truthful with his fears about being in Gillette Stadium as a player?
I felt like the Packers were listening to Eli, you and I, our conversation on Friday about we got to come out and run the ball. I think our conversation was bugged, you know, kind of like the Patriots used to do back in the day.
We played the Patriots in that second Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and they practiced at your facility all week. Were you a little nervous going back in your facility the next year that they didn't have like cameras in your quarterback room?
Every time I played against New England, I used to go and talk to my receivers like in the shower in the far corner. I'm like, don't talk about a play next to my locker because I know it's bugged. I know it's got a hot mic in there. We're in the shower. Very strange to see seven guys hanging out back there in the shower.
Yeah, the Patriots are cheating all the time. They never beat us fair and square. Like, I only threw three picks to Ty Law because they were listening to us in the shower. Like, get out of here.
Isn't that like the Red Auerbach stuff, though?
Yes, turn the heat up on them.
Yeah. But that's what...
No, but it's gamesmanship with Red Auerbach. It's cheating with the Patriots.
Well, I mean...
How many years ago was that, Peyton? Turn the page.
Very strange to see seven guys hanging out back there in the shower.
Unless they're John.
Fart on guys anymore.
Oh, well, there's that, too. Wonder if they had a good sit.
That paranoia is legitimate. You remember there was even stories... Was it the Seth Wickersham article or one of the Wickersham articles where he's like, it got to the point where opposing teams were even complaining that the Patriots were giving them like warm Gatorade.
I've heard. So in the years on the Patriots radio network, there were 10 years for me there. And there is a guy who is basically in control of a lot of the radio transmission. Nice guy. He works for the NFL and everything. I have heard a team official in the past dog cuss that guy.
Oh, I bet.
In thinking that something nefarious was afoot. Like, as soon as the radio transmission to go out, here comes somebody from one of the teams looking for the radio transmission guy to like dog cuss him and yell him out. It's that paranoia is very real.
Oh, it's real. No, I don't.
But it's hyped up here. It's at Red Auerbach levels here.
Right.
Versus when you go to, you know, MetLife Stadium or something like that. Coming up, Mac Jones joined OMF yesterday, and I want to bring to Keith something that I've picked up with Mac Jones and a certain word and phrase that he likes to use that I think proves why he is the best quarterback for this team. You'll understand in 5 minutes. That's next.